is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert players, coaches, and fans follow.
Ooh-wee.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Hello and welcome. The early signing day has come and gone. The signing period is still open, but Oregon goes 22 of 22 commitments signed. The Beavers 15 of 15. Both programs taking care of business on the first day of the early signing period. We've got a lot to go over. This is going to be essentially a recap of what we saw during the early signing period, the recruiting classes for the Oregon Ducks and Oregon State Beavers. We'll start with the Oregon Ducks, but I want to let people know, stick around for that second segment. I am going to tell people how Oregon State fixes its recruiting class, how it fixes its recruiting approach, because right now the Beavers are struggling. 11th in the Pac-12, according to Rivals and 24/7 Sports. If you go by average stars per commit, they were even worse. They were 12th. Dead last in talent per kid they brought in, and it was a small class. It was one of the lowest rated classes in the history of the Pac-12 conference, but it's fixable. There are some really easy things to do to fix it. I'll tell you what that is coming up later in the show, but first, the Oregon Ducks. The number 5 recruiting class in the entire country prior to this year's recruiting cycle. The best class Oregon had ever signed was 9th on Rivals and 12th on 24/7 Sports. What does that get you? What does that bring in? So it's 5th. What does that mean? That group that was 9th and 12th, DeAnthony Thomas, Marcus Mariota, Grasu. It was the backbone of a national title run. Now, they fell just short, but they made a run at a national title with that group. This group supposed to be better. And yeah, you struck gold with a 3-star in Marcus Mariota, but this class this year is absolutely loaded. The Ducks got the number 1 prospect in the entire country, Kayvon Thibodeau. We said all along on this show, it's 50-50, Bama or Oregon. I don't know who. I wouldn't make a prediction because I said it's really going to be close. He picks Oregon, and then Oregon fans really waiting because a lot of signatures came in early. 7 a.m., 8 a.m. They were almost done. Thibodeau doesn't sign and get it all in until the afternoon. Oregon fans panicking, but he is signed, sealed, delivered. They also got the number 1 corner in the entire country, Mikhail Wright. Did not play his senior year in high school. Had to sit out because of transfer reasons. So there's some cause for concern there. He didn't play his senior year. The number 3 inside linebacker in the entire country, Mace Funa, also missed his senior year. Suffered a knee injury, missed his entire senior year, but a big-time prospect. The very best way, I think, to go over this is to grade the positions. I just think there's no better way to explain to you guys exactly how special what Oregon did than there is to go over the positions. And it starts with the defensive backs. Mikhail Wright, again, the number 1 corner in the entire country. That's a really nice piece. You add in a corner that's the best in the country, obviously doesn't get any better than that. Big time athlete, runs a 4.35 or 4.4 40-yard dash. Quick. 5'11", 175, good hips, good football player. 3-star safety, Triquez Bridges. That's a kid from Alabama. He committed to Oregon and didn't take any other visits. Just locked it down. I'm ready to go to Oregon. I'm set. He had an offer from Alabama. Just set. I'm good. Oregon's the place for me. I really like what he potentially brings to the table at linebacker. This was a special linebacker group. It was a special linebacker group. Defensive backs get a B+. Linebackers get an A. Mace Funa, again, the number 3 inside linebacker in the entire country. Special Under Armour All-American, Jimon Eifert. Jimon Eifert's the number 7 outside linebacker in the country. And you pull him out of Florida over Florida State, Florida, Alabama, LSU. It just, and this will be a broken record in this first segment. There are a lot of years where Jimon Eifert is your headliner. There are some years going back within the last 5 years that Jimon Eifert would be the best kid you got in your whole class. And he's almost an extra piece. It's incredible. And then on signing day, Oregon gets Drew Mathis, the number 3 junior college inside linebacker, almost as a flyer. 3 linebackers, the number 3 inside backer in the country, the number 7 outside linebacker in the country, and the number 3 JC inside linebacker in the country. It's an impressive deep group at linebacker and then defensive line. Everybody knows about Kayvon Thibodeau, a program-altering talent, the number 1 recruit in the entire country. When you look at this class and say, who is the guy that totally changes things? Who is the guy that puts Oregon on the map and establishes them as a national power? It's Kayvon Thibodeau. Oregon fan went in to that bowl game, that boring, boring bowl game at halftime, and sat through that whole first bowl game. I don't even remember what it was called. And they wait through that whole thing just for Kayvon Thibodeau's announcement. I swear, halftime was probably more watched than that actual game ratings-wise. I don't know if they released that. That'd be interesting to see. But Kayvon Thibodeau picks Oregon over Alabama, Florida, and Florida State. Those were his finalists. He also had all the other big boys, Michigan, Ohio State, Oklahoma, USC, big-time talent. And it's almost as if he announced on national television, yes, Oregon already had a top 10 class. It was almost as if he announced, Oregon has arrived. They are a national power. They've always been a national power on the football field, and obviously they're having a little bit of a lull right now. They got to get that turned around. They're not a superpower right now. But they had about a decade under Chip Kelly and a little bit under Mark Helfrich where they were a superpower. And then on the recruiting trail, they were kind of flirting with top 25 status. Now they're a superpower in recruiting. Kayvon Thibodeau. They also land the number 7 and number 12 defensive tackles in the country. And again, we talk about almost as an aside. People don't even pay attention to Sua Avepoti and Keon Ware-Hudson. It's like, yeah, those guys are good. They're 3-star prospects on a couple of other sites. On Rivals, they're 4-star prospects. Those kids are in the bottom half of this class. And they're the number 7 and number 12 defensive tackle in the country. That's how you get better. That's how you get better. Your trench guys are superstars and big, big-bodied kids. Sua Avepoti, one of the strongest kids in the entire country. Offensive line. Oregon last year signed their big offensive line class. 5 guys. They averaged 6'6", 320 pounds. Monsters. So this year, there wasn't as big a priority, but they land the number 1 JC offensive tackle in the country, 6'7", 345-pound offensive tackle, Mali Asala Aumavelaulu, and they land Jonah Tawanu'u. Jonah Tawanu'u, right around that top 10 to 12 offensive tackle in the country. USC made a real hard push for him late. Mario Cristobal, in his conference about the class, his news conference about the class, said he felt Jonah Tawanu'u was arguably the best tackle in the country. I'll trust his judgment. I know there's going to be some salesmanship, right? Coach is going to give you a little salesmanship about the class. But I also don't think he's going to blow smoke and put unrealistic expectations on a kid. He can easily just say he was a really good tackle. For him to say, I think this kid's got a chance to be the best tackle in the country is big. Jonah Tawanu'u, again, not necessarily one of their top 5 or 6 commitments, and he might be the best tackle in the country. That's how special this group is. Wide receiver, the biggest area of need, right? I mean, if you watched Oregon football this year, you saw Dylan Mitchell and then a cast of guys who couldn't get open and drop the ball. It's the reality. You don't have to sugarcoat it. Let's be real about it. They have Dylan Mitchell and then a whole lot of unproven. They needed to add wide receiver talent, and they did it. 4 big-time wide receivers. Josh Delgado chooses Oregon over Washington and USC. Micah Pittman's like 5'11", 180. I like Micah Pittman. Doesn't necessarily have that prototypical NFL size. Again, 5'11", 180. So in the recruiting world, his stock falls. Why? Because he doesn't project as a high-end NFL pick. His ceiling in the NFL is not real high. He's not going to be a superstar Pro Bowler, more than likely. He could, but more than likely he's not. They kind of reserve that for the AJ Greens, Julio Jones types. But he does every single thing right. Runs good routes. In running plays, he will block the heck out of a DB or a linebacker. He just does everything right. I think Micah Pittman's got a chance to play really early. He had over 3,000 yards receiving in his high school career. He's big time. Lance Wilhoit is the real interesting one here. Lance Wilhoit's a top 60 kid nationally on Rivals. I don't know if he's even a top 60 receiver on 24/7 Sports. So one site sees him as one of the best receivers in the country. The other site doesn't even see him. He's a 3-star prospect, not even one of the top 40, 50 receivers in the country. So there's a gap there. It'll be interesting to see which one he turns out to be. Tight end, they get Justin Herbert's little brother, Patrick Herbert. Jump the gun there on that one. The 4-star tight end, and here's the added little bonus. Patrick Herbert, in his own right, probably a top 10 or 12 tight end in the entire country. By the way, we've gone through every position. We get D-line, they get an A+. You get O-line, you get an A-. Wide receiver, an A. 4 good receivers. Every position we go through is a high grade. Tight end, you get an A. How can it be an A+? Justin and Patrick want to play together. So the fact that you get Patrick might mean you get another year of Justin. You get another year of Justin because you bring in his little brother. That's A+ stuff. but they get an A there. Running back, I like what they did at running back. I don't love it. They get an A-. It's good. Javon Wilson, a big-time talent, 6'2", 215 pounds. I actually like him better as an outside linebacker or a safety. Oregon's going to bring him in, starting him out as a bruising running back. I'm fine with that. I get that. I think he probably ends up playing on the defensive side of the ball. And then you bring in Sean Dollar. Sean Dollar's the number one all-purpose running back in the entire country from a national championship program, back-to-back national championship program in modern day. Sean Dollar's very close to Thomas Graham Jr. and Jalen Redd. You look at how this started to happen, this California pipeline, this Cali flock. Getting Thomas Graham Jr. and Jalen Redd, those kids were worshipped down there. There are kids who love those guys. Sean Dollar's loved those guys. And when he was a sophomore in high school, he said, my goal is to play college football with those two. They've been mentors for him. Oregon locks them in. Again, you lay the groundwork early. They get Sean Dollar's quarterback, C+. Three-star quarterback, Cale Millen. I like Cale Millen. He's got all the potential in the world, all the tools in the world, 6'4", 190 pounds, really good athlete, surprisingly good athlete, doesn't get enough credit. But it's nationally, it's an abysmal year for quarterbacks. There are not a lot of good quarterbacks in the country this year. You can look at guys who are 5'6", 7" in the country, the number 5'6", 7" pro style and dual threat passer in the country, and they have major concerns. Because they just aren't real polished group. Just some years it happens. It's the lowest rated quarterback group in more than a decade. So it's just not a real good group. He's a three-star guy. He's the number 20 pro-style quarterback in the country. A lot of concerns there. He's got potential to put it all together. He's a confident kid. He's a good kid. He's got a big arm. He's a good athlete. He's got the right size. He just needs to put it together and raise his ability to the level of competition when he gets to the Pac-12 conference. So we'll see. In-state recruiting. People look at in-state recruiting and say, Oregon got one in-state kid. It's unacceptable. No. No. There's only one guy that fits what they wanted. Sometimes in-state recruiting grades are as much about not taking guys just because they're in-state as it is about taking as many guys from the state as you can. Get the best players that fit what you do and leave the state alone outside of that. And this was one of those years. It's a really down year in the state of Oregon. They get Patrick Herbert. Great tight end, and then they let everybody else take the rest of the guys because they didn't really fit. I like what they did. Their overall grade for the Oregon Ducks is an A+. The highest rated class in the history of the program. The first time in program history, Oregon has had the number one class in the Pac-12 conference. Everything is coming up crystal ball. Oregon fans are crystal ball in. Recruits are crystal ball in. The Cali flock is real. The Oregon Ducks finish this recruiting cycle with its best ever finish. They've still got a couple spots. And that B+ in the defensive backfield, look for that to change. They're going to take probably another safety, another corner, and they might take a defensive tackle. We're going to talk about that, though, in the next 6 weeks or so, because we've got some time before that late signing period. Next, I'll talk to you about Oregon State. How do they fix it? One of the lowest rated classes, and on Rivals and 24/7, I believe, the lowest rated class in the history of both sites' rankings for the Oregon State Beavers. How do they fix it? What do they need to do on the recruiting trail? I'll tell you. I'll fix it for you. Next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
From five stars to unknown prospects, we cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
I did grades for Oregon State. They had their lowest rated recruiting class in the history of the program on 24/7. I believe on Rivals, I didn't go through it all the way back as far as Rivals goes. It was one of the worst. They ranked 11th in the Pac-12 on Rivals and 24/7 Sports, in part because they only had 15 commitments and other programs, you know, Oregon, for example, had 22. But then I went by average star rating on Rivals and they dropped to 12th. So it's a small class, and then in terms of talent, it's supposed to be, you know, air quotes, the least talented group per commit in the conference as well. So we can go through the grades on that, and I can give bad grades. And I did on OregonLive.com/recruiting. But that's not really all that productive. How do we fix it going forward? Well, let's talk about what's not quite right now about Oregon State. I think that starts with the fact that they're selling college town, the best college town in the Pac-12. I'll tell you what, when you tell that to a high school kid, that sounds really good to people who are alumni, and that sounds really good to the olds. They love that. Yeah, I'm from the best college town. I had a great time. High school kids here, it's the best college town? Sweet. I'm also being recruited by USC, UCLA, and UW. So you're telling me Corvallis is more exciting than Seattle and Los Angeles. Now, I know that's not what Oregon State fan means when they say it's the best college town. They mean best small town. I get it. It's not necessarily how recruits look at it. Best college town. Perfect. I'm there. Then you land in Portland and you go, okay, I'm here for this. I get it. Kids from Los Angeles, kids from Seattle, big cities. They fly into Portland and see big cities and they're like, I get it. I get it. Portland's big. And they go, just a second. It's going to be an hour and a half car ride. And they see trees and farmland and more trees and more farmland. And when you, by the time you get out there.
I don't mean to interrupt, but don't forget the farm animals. They're out there too.
Okay.
I just had to throw that out there.
And farm animals.
There was plenty of guys that I know that did that. They're like, I see nothing but farm animals. Anyways, keep going. Didn't mean to get you off.
You're good. You're good. I get it. You're right. Then they get on campus. And right now, Oregon State doesn't have a closer. So step one, get a coach on this staff who is young and can close. There is not a guy right now on that staff who can go into a living room in Los Angeles, can go into a living room in Podunk, Idaho, can go into a living room in Seattle, or could go into a living room in Miami and fit in all those places and just win a recruit over. They don't have that guy. I love Coach Smith. I think he's really good. I think he's going to be end up being a good hire. But he's not a real dynamic personality. You don't have that dynamic personality, so get that dynamic personality. If you're selling best college town in America, don't go after kids from L.A. Don't go after kids from L.A. Kids from L.A. don't like being taken out in the middle of nowhere. It's like, where am I? And that's how they look at it. Doesn't matter what I think. Doesn't matter what you think. I think Corvallis is awesome. My family grew up in Baker City and Redmond. I grew up in Portland. But I have family in Baker City and Redmond. To me, Corvallis seems awesome. But kids from L.A. don't. You know who does? You know what works for Wisconsin? Coming after kids from rural areas. It's hard to find them. They're not as, it's not as densely populated, but if you get a kid from a rural area, whether he be in the Midwest, and that's where I would start focusing a little bit, the Midwest and parts of Texas. Go to California and some of the more deserty areas and get those kids. Because those kids don't mind a long drive. Those kids don't mind best college town. Corvallis seems awesome to a kid who's from the Midwest. It's just the reality. It's the reality of what you face. You know, when you look at who the kids are that Oregon State has gotten that had multiple Pac-12 offers from this state? They got Corey Stover. He's from Coos Bay. He had an offer from Cal. He liked Oregon State. Omar Spates, they got him. He had a ton of offers. He's from Corvallis. Marcus, you went to Oregon State, didn't you? Where'd you go to high school?
Crook County High School in Prineville, Oregon.
In Prineville, Oregon.
Yeehaw,
and,
huh?
And what did Corvallis feel like to you?
I wouldn't say home because I'm more of an East Coast guy, but, you know, it felt a little more reasonable.
It was like a step up than Prineville.
It was a step up, yeah.
A step up. And what you've got right now is you're recruiting, when you recruit those Los Angeles kids, when you recruit those Seattle kids, and they fly in, and they don't have a 10-minute limo ride to USC. They don't have a 10-minute limo ride to Washington. They've got an hour and a half long town car ride to Corvallis. Don't go after big city kids anymore. Focus, and there's going to be a select few. You can still go after a select few. Focus on kids from more rural areas. You know who's had success doing that exact thing? Wisconsin. You know who's turning it around doing that exact same thing? Iowa State. They figured it out. What are we? What are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? Don't double down on your weaknesses. And Oregon State's doing a little bit of doubling down. They're taking a lot of pride in who they are. And I get that. I get taking pride in who you are. But if you have a bunch of adults in the room who are like, yeah, we're dang proud to be from a blue collar, take your lunch to work, get after it kind of guys. And then your staff is a bunch of those kind of guys. If you were going to have the walking embodiment of Corvallis, if there was a single person that looked and acted and, you know, it means being honest. It means being genuine. It also doesn't have the same flash as LA. The walking embodiment of Corvallis is Coach Smith. You need to zig when you've already on campus got zag. Look at Oregon. They sell flash. They've always had that, right? That's always been who they are. They get running backs and quarterbacks and receivers. They've always been able to get that. They haven't been able to get O-line, D-line. So who's their head coach? An O-lineman from the South. An O-line guy from the South. They don't always necessarily get Pauly guys. Who's their D-line coach? They need D-line coaches. Coach Salavea. They found ways to hide their weaknesses or flip them to strengths with their coaching staff. You can't double down with your coaching staff on the recruiting trail on substance and honesty and blue collar and integrity. Those things are good, and you need some of that on your staff, but Oregon State already sells that. What don't they sell? Flash. You don't have any on your coaching staff. Get some. Go recruit the rural areas. Go get kids who are from farm towns who say, man, this place is sweet. This could be a barn party every weekend. And by the way, we're going to go have fun and strap it up and beat people. We're going to go shock the world. Boise State's had a lot of success doing that. Boise State's best players have not come from big cities. They just haven't. That's a fact. I mean, go back and look at their recruiting classes and their best players and who stepped up for them. They're finding guys from smaller areas. They're finding guys from smaller towns. There aren't as many of them. It's hard to do. But then you mask your weakness because those kids are used to that. Kids from Los Angeles aren't used to an hour and a half drive through Farmville. They're not. It doesn't work. Marcus, you've talked to kids on the recruiting trail. I know you have. Big city kids after that drive say what?
Hell no.
Okay, I wasn't expecting you to go that negative. No, but
No. But you have to think about it like, if the coaches don't sell playing time right away, right, at least for these young kids on when they go on their recruiting trails or whatever, but if they don't after that, they're like, okay, well, I could go to – think about it. I could go to Eugene. Here's a good example, Eugene, right? Eugene isn't a big city by any means, but when you first go in, it looks a lot bigger and a lot better.
But when you go into Eugene – and that's the one thing Oregon's done differently, and I wish Oregon State would think about doing it too. Eugene's the same way. Eugene's not cool. Nobody goes to Eugene and goes, wow, this is amazing. Yeah. You know what they do, though? They go into those facilities and go, holy cow, this is better than anything in L.A. Or they're flashy within the building.
Mm-hmm.
And Oregon State seems to double down on this. We're going to have a lunch pail coach. We're going to have lunch pail facilities. We're going to have a lunch pail program, and we're blue collar. Our coaching staff's blue collar. Everything's blue collar. So you can get the blue collar kid. Awesome. How are you going to get the kid that's not blue collar?
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to get a broad range. Oregon can get the O-line guy now because of Cristobal. Their inherent flash that they built over years gets running backs and receivers. They didn't necessarily have a dynamic recruiter on staff with Helfrich. They brought those guys in. They took a gamble. Are they the best X's and O's coaches? Remains a question.
Mm-hmm.
But you've patched up the areas where you're weak with your coaching staff. Find a way to hit check all the boxes. Okay, we're not the flashiest campus. We'll be flashy to kids who don't grow up in major cities. If we recruit major cities, Corvallis will always look smaller to kids from big cities in the Pac-12. They will. But if you go after some Midwest kids, you gear it a little differently. You go after some kids from some smaller cities, and then you go after some Midwest kids, they're used to it. They're okay with seeing some farmland. They get it. They'll see some trees. Get a dynamic recruiter in there and stop going after the big city kid unless he wants to get away from the big city. Then you've got to sell. But if you keep going in and saying, you know, we are the best college town there is, it's like, really? I can go to a Laker game if I go to UCLA. That's a pretty cool college town.
That's what it is. Oregon State's up against the odds when it comes to recruiting, for sure. But it's just
But when you cross your arms, and say, "Yeah, but we're Oregon State and we're dang proud," great. That sells to your 60-year-olds.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
17-year-olds who have no loyalty to a school, they're trying to find a school, aren't going to buy into. Aren't you proud of our heritage at Oregon State? Of like, you know, blue collar. They don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
So to them, it's just not as good facilities, far drive, not as flashy. The girls aren't as hot because there aren't as many of them. It's what it is. And that's what kids say. I'm not trying to be a jerk about it. That's what kids say.
You're right. Well, and that's the thing. That's why I think a lot of us that did go to Oregon State when Coach Riley was there, that's why we chose Oregon State, was because it wasn't the fact that they were super flashy or whatever it is, but it's the fact that they won games, right? That's a big thing.
Where are you from?
Prineville.
They won games, and you said Corvallis was a step up from where you were.
Yeah.
So find kids who say, man, Corvallis is a step up from where I am. And you know what comes with it? Winning games.
Absolutely. But, I mean, let's be real. The biggest thing is you got to win games. If you don't win games, then...
But here's the vicious cycle they're in, Marcus, and you're right. They're having a worse time recruiting now than they ever have. Ever. This is, on paper, the worst recruiting class they've ever had. So it's getting worse, not better. So you've got to change something in your approach.
That call the best college town that has to go. Really does.
But you can do that. You can sell that to kids who aren't from big cities. But if you try to go into big cities and we're going to recruit the heck out of California, how'd that work out? Last check, they were right around the best kid they had from California was like 50th in the state of California. That's not going to work. That can't be your best kid from California. But look at the guys they won for. Look at the guys who had multiple Pac-12 offers. They weren't from major cities. Find what you are and then put a Band-Aid on what you're not with your hires, with the guys you target, and with the way you play football. Oregon State's got some things to fix, but they are fixable. And they will get better. Coach Smith just needs to stop buying in to what the 60-year-olds say and start buying into what the 17 and 18-year-olds say. We got to get to break. Pac-12 recruiting rankings. Who did the best? Who did the worst? Who disappointed and who shined? All of that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
From game tapes to junior days to recruiting visits, this is where it happens. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, featuring Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
For the first time in its history, the Oregon Ducks finish as your Pac-12 conference recruiting champions. That's the starting point, right? If you're an Oregon fan, if you're a listener, that's the starting point. Oregon had the best recruiting class in the entire Pac-12 conference for the first time ever. And they did it by landing 6 of the top 16 players in the state of California. You know how many USC grabbed? Midday yesterday, that stood at 0. 0 of the top 16 California kids. Oregon gets 6 of 16. Mark Helfrich's last full recruiting cycle, he didn't land a top 45 player in the state of California. It's all fine and good to talk about in-state recruiting. It's all fine and good to talk about Florida recruiting when Willie Taggart was here. The backbone of this class, what made this class special, was that Oregon finally got their hooks back into California in the biggest way possible. Kayvon Thibodeau, the number one prospect in the entire country, commits to Oregon. USC didn't make his finalists. USC didn't make his finalists. Mikhail Wright, the number one corner in the country, the number two prospect in the state of California. He signed up with Oregon. 22 for 22. Oregon goes, signing all of its prospects. You want to look at the surprise of the Pac-12 conference. And Marcus, you're more than welcome to chime in anytime here with Pac-12 rankings. But the surprise for me is the USC Trojans. Barely squeaked out a top 25 showing, and they needed the final day to do it. They entered the day 34th in the country. It's a layup for USC to get a top 15 class if they just don't screw up the kids within 100 miles of their campus, and they didn't get it done. I cannot believe that Clay Helton got to keep his job after this recruiting performance. If we're grading recruiting performances, USC gets an F minus.
Yeah, well, that's just so bad because every kid, especially, I mean, basically every kid from Southern California or even California, think about it. What do they always say? If USC offers them, they're going, right? And that's how it is. And it's kind of like an easy layup. And what is it? Is it Modern Day? Is how to pronounce it, that high school?
Yep.
I mean, those guys would just funnel right into USC. But like you said yesterday on the show that they just didn't. Like, Oregon just picked out most of them. Oregon State, I think, got one of them. And they all just decided not to go to USC, I guess. But you're right. The fact that Clay Helton got to keep his job and he has this poor of a recruiting class, I don't understand, man. That's where you got to come in.
They had 21 commitments. So that's Oregon had 22, Washington 21, Stanford 21, Arizona State 19. So right in that wheelhouse. Their average star rating on Rivals is 3.19. That is abysmal. Utah had the lowest rated class in the conference. Utah's star rating per commit was 3.09. They were only a tenth of a point per commit better than the last place team in the conference. I actually didn't know that until I looked it up just now. A tenth of a star better per commit than last place in the conference, and you're USC.
That's what I don't understand. It's USC. Like, when you go there, even on visits or whatever it is, that place is, I mean, first of all, it's in LA. You can't beat the weather. You can't beat the city. It's USC. It has all the tradition. I just don't understand. Like, the fact that Clay Helton is still there, that's just, I don't know if that's what drove a lot of the players away. Maybe it was the fact that the coaching staff, they didn't know who was going to be there, who wasn't.
You go 5-7 and fire your entire offensive staff. And the other big piece here, and people don't realize it, when you have a freshman quarterback, what is USC known for? QBU, right?
Yeah.
So they normally stack this class with at least one really high-level quarterback. They couldn't get one because every quarterback who looked at it went, I'm not playing for 3 years.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I'm not playing for... So they right away lop off a guy. Kayvon Thibodeau, couldn't get him. Mekhale Wright, couldn't get him. Oregon ripped USC's heart out. USC finishes fourth in the Pac-12 conference. Washington had a good class. Washington has the number 15 class in the country. It's a solid class. I think the headliner is Dylan Morris. I don't care what the recruiting rankings say.
Best QB you've ever seen?
Best passer.
Best passer? That's what, oh, that's
best
what
high school passer I have ever seen.
Who have you seen, though? You've seen some legit guys?
I've been to 4 Elite 11s, I think.
Oh, okay.
So Tua and Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence and the whole squad. Okay. I've seen every good quarterback for 4 years, except for this recruiting cycle. But I've seen some of those guys through regional events, 7-on-7 events. I've seen some dudes.
And he's the best passer.
He's the best passer. He's the most – he's Kellen Moore with a better arm. He is unbelievably
Kellen
accurate.
Moore with the better arm.
He's Kellen Moore with a better arm.
So that's a lot to put on a young man.
I don't care. I've told him that. He said, we'll see. I'll have to go out and prove
it. What
other
offers did he have?
Everybody. Man. Oh, okay. He's the number like 3 or 4 quarterback in the country. He's really good. He would be higher. He would be the number one. And I've actually heard this from recruiting sites, except he doesn't have the measurables of a prototypical NFL quarterback. He's not 6'6", 320.
What is he? He's like 6'1",
6'1",
right?
I forget, like 185, 190, 200. But if he were 2 inches taller, he would have been the number one player in the country. Dylan Morris is unreal, and he's going to elevate what Washington does. I've seen Jacob Eason. Dylan Morris is a much, much more consistent, more accurate passer. Than Jacob Eason is your absolute in shorts king of the world at quarterback. But in every 5 passes, he's going to throw one that is abysmal. He's going to have 3 or 4 solid ones, but one is going to sail on him or go somewhere it shouldn't. Dylan Morris might, in 5 passes, have one that's a foot away from where he wants it to be. I mean, he is as pinpoint accurate as they come. Look out for Dylan Morris. Stanford, with its particular or its traditional close, the number 3 recruiting class in the Pac-12, a good recruiting class. Stanford always kind of closes late because guys have to qualify, and once they find out they qualify, you get a flurry of activity, a flurry of commitments. Again, USC finishes 4th in the conference. Not a great finish for USC. They are still in the mix for a couple of 5-star guys, but to beat a mid-December, 76 to 77% of the prospects that are expected to be FBS kids are off the board, and USC doesn't have a top, I think their top-rated guy is 19th in the state of California. It's inexcusable. 5th Cal, 6 Arizona State, 7 UCLA. Chip Kelly didn't have a 4-star prospect until the last couple weeks of the recruiting cycle. He was 50th. In the nation. UCLA thought they were bringing in Chip Kelly and about to really, really shine and just take over the conference. And instead, they flatlined. UCLA had a hard time. Chip Kelly needs to modernize approach. I said it when he was at Oregon. Great coach. Not a great recruiter. He always says, you need me more than I need you. And
yes, sir.
And I'll tell you what, that's his thing.
That's the problem. No kid wants to hear that.
Well, especially now, because kids have short memories. And it's like, aren't you the coach that just got fired a bunch of times from the NFL? And I'm not picking on Chip. I think Chip's a fantastic coach.
Yeah,
I do.
He really is.
But that's what kids think, is this coach has been fired from the NFL a few times. He hasn't been a big thing in a couple years. He's got a great offense. And then you come on campus and he goes, you kind of need me. And he goes, you know who else needs me? You know who I need? I want Alabama. I'll go to Oregon. They want me. You feel like I need you.
Yeah.
I'll go to Oregon because they want me. He's got to change the approach. He's got to get a different staff. The guys that are old school that don't want to recruit, that dog will not hunt anymore in the Pac-12 conference. Utah last. A little bit of a surprise, but again, stars per commit, they actually did a pretty good job. Oregon State 11th. More recruiting talk next. I'm recruiting with Andrew Nimick on 1080 The Fan.
The Herd with Colin Cowherd.
Colin Cowherd.
Why do I even consider Ohio State a Big Ten team? They're nothing like the Big Ten. Look at their record in the last 10 years. Take out the Luke Fickle year. They don't even average one loss a season. Just take out the 1 year they were in turmoil and hired a guy who's a coordinator or a position coach, not a head coach. That year they were 3-5. All the other years, they don't even average a loss a year.
The original home of the Herd with Colin Cowherd.
The original.
Weekdays 9 to noon, 1080 The Fan.
How did the Pac-12 do as a whole? That's the question, right? Because the conference right now is just painfully, painfully down. And honestly, overall, it's weird. I don't think I've ever seen this before. Recruiting rankings in the Pac-12 actually mirror what the teams are doing on the field. Washington's kind of right on the... They're not a real national title contender, right? Just like Oregon wasn't necessarily really in the mix to finish number one. It was a very, very good class, just like Washington had a really, really good season. But it wasn't competing for the national title, and that's Oregon. Oregon is Washington on the field. Then you've got that 15 in Washington. Oregon's, you know, the Pac-12 has one team, one or two teams in the top 25 left on the field. This recruiting class, good Lord. The Pac-12 has like three top 25 programs, and that's just how it is in recruiting. One team that can contend, kind of, Washington on the field, Oregon recruiting rankings, and then a couple of teams that are interspersed throughout the top 25, but absolutely getting killed by the SEC, who is much, much higher. The Pac-12's got to figure out the recruiting. They've got to be able to get into Texas, do a little better there, do a little better in Florida, do a little better in Ohio, because the whole conference is fairly reliant right now on California. Nevada produces a few prospects. Oregon produces a couple prospects. Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota, kind of right in that Pac-12 region, just total cross-offs. Washington's getting better. Washington's going to have some dudes in the next couple years, but not the same depth as when you look at Texas and then the, you know, Oklahoma's right there. Georgia, Louisiana, Florida. Loaded states, all compact, all next to each other. This conference doesn't have a lot. They're too reliant on California. That's just the reality. And that's why Oregon State, I think, can do a good job by going elsewhere. Look at the Midwest. Get some kids from smaller towns in Texas. Marcus, this Pac-12 thing is compounding on itself where not big-time recruiting classes, when they don't play marquee matchups, the stadiums aren't real full. They're starting to look kind of like a three-star product to the SEC's five-star product.
Yeah. Well, and another big thing too, I think you talked about it yesterday on the show, was when you just look at these recruits and when they go on their visits, I remember for a fact, one of the worst things, or something I'd never wanted to see, was a half empty stadium. Like, that's the worst. Cause then you're like, okay, well, nobody comes to the games anyways, no matter how good we are, no matter if we're winning, losing, nobody's coming to the games. And especially as a kid, obviously coming in, you want obviously all the people to see you. You want to be on the spotlight, the big stage. And what's the big stage now? Is it the Pac-12 or is it the SEC? Obviously, it's the SEC, because no matter who they play, I mean, shoot, Alabama will play the Citadel and that stadium will be packed.
Right. Yeah.
It's just, they're just on two completely different levels.
And you look at Oregon, and Oregon this year just wasn't real loaded. Going over the Pac-12 recruits that ended up committing from the state of Oregon, there wasn't a tremendous amount of talent. You had Patrick Herbert, the Sheldon tight end. Michael Johnson Jr., the Under Armour All-American, left the Pac-12. He went to Penn State, four-star quarterback, one of the top 10 dual-threat quarterbacks in the country. Then there was a big chunk of guys who had a chance to be good, and it's kind of a wait-and-see approach, and a lot of them went to Oregon State. Corey Stover, Marcus Spates, Anthony Gould, Kelson Hennessy, those guys are all headed to Oregon State. Luke Musgrave, I think, by the way, the best of those guys. And another kid, when you talk about a guy that had other Pac-12 offers, he's not from the big city. He's from Bend. Again, yet another player that Oregon State, when they beat the Pac-12 schools for another player, he's almost never from a big city. He's from a rural area. And I know Bend is growing. I'm not anti-Bend. I love Bend. But it's not a big city. And it certainly doesn't bother you to drive through and see a lot of trees everywhere. Ben's all about that.
Right. He's a real low-key kid. Did you see when he did his – they always do, like, those videos saying why they're excited to go to whatever school they're committing to. I think he was, like, sitting outside by his truck. And I saw that, and I was like, yeah.
That's the kid you can get.
That's the kid.
That's the kid you can get. So pursue those kids. Go after those kids. Don't go after the kid from a big city in L.A. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. But Luke Musgrave is a stud. He had an offer from Oregon. Chooses Oregon State instead. Omar Spates offers all over the place. Where's he from? Corvallis. Corey Stover had an offer from Cal. He chooses Oregon State. Where's he from? Coos Bay. Look at the kids they've had a shot with. Hank Bachmeier, they had a real shot with. He ended up at Boise State, but they had a shot with him. One of the top six quarterbacks in the country. You can get those kids. You can be in the mix for those kids. Because to them, Oregon State is an upgrade from where they grew up, and that's okay. We were talking during the break, and we talked about the view. People talk about how beautiful Corvallis is, and I made a joke, and I've actually heard a kid say this. People say the view is really nice at Oregon State, but the view looked pretty good at Arizona and Arizona State when we were by the pool.
Right.
And
you're being real.
That's the real. I mean, it sounds good to adults. We're going to sell the landscape. We're going to sell lunch pail. That isn't what kids want to hear. They want flash. They want substance. They want what looks good right in front of them. Oregon State's got work to do, man. But it's fixable. And I actually believe Coach Smith can do it. But I do think he needs to make some changes on his staff already.
I was going to ask you if you legit think he can. I think he can. But then again, I probably have my orange and black hat on, right?
No, I think he can. He's smart. They've got good coaches in that room. There are knowledgeable coaches in that room. They just need a guy to leave the coach's room, the film room, get into the living room, and also be just as dynamic.
Yeah.
And they don't have that guy. Well, I mean, the perfect example was last year. Cole Turner was committed to Nevada. Coach Riley and Coach Smith went to Clackamas High School together to get that kid. Let's go lock him in. Those are two big names. After that meeting, the message I got was, I'm not really considering Oregon State anymore. That's not good. That can't happen. That doesn't happen with a lot of big-time programs that can really recruit. If Mario Cristobal shows up with Coach Salavea and they come to your school and you're an Oregon kid, there's almost a zero chance that the message I get after that is, yeah, there's no way I'd consider Oregon.
Well, right, but just see their personalities, right? And that's what Coach Smith said, is those are the guys that he wants to get, are kind of guys that have that kind of mentality, or maybe that act like that. I don't know, but when you see Coach Cristobal, right, and I watched him a couple times, like, you see him in his interviews, he's like yelling, and right, he's super energetic, everything like that, and Coach Smith just isn't like that.
Right, so you're not like that, but some kids do like it. So go get the guy on your staff that does it.
Yeah.
It's a simple fix. Don't hire a bunch of guys who are just like you, because you're only going to get kids who are exactly like you. Get kids so you have the whole spectrum. You get the kid that likes flash. You get the kid that likes the blue, you know, the blue collar. You get everything. Don't just pound the table for Corvallis. It's time to fix some things. Thank you for listening to Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.